There was a time when physicians didn't prescribe pills. They prescribed plants. Imagine walking into a Roman apothecary in 200 AD. The shelves are lined with dried leaves, roots, and seeds that could cure everything from battlefield wounds to broken hearts. These weren't supplements. They were medicine. They were currency. They were sacred. But here is what nobody tells you. Most of those herbs? They don't exist anymore. Not because they stopped working. Not because science proved them useless. They vanished because we forgot about them. Because empires fell. Because trade routes collapsed. Because someone decided there was a cheaper way. Today, we have basil and oregano, and maybe some thyme if we're feeling adventurous. Back then, ancient healers had access to hundreds of botanical weapons that could alter consciousness, stop infections, and even, according to ancient texts, bring the dead back to life. And we lost them. Not all at once. Slowly. Quietly. One harvest season at a time. One burned library. One conquered civilization. These weren't just cooking herbs. They were the difference between life and death. Between victory and defeat. Between remembering your ancestors and forgetting them entirely. So what were these lost herbs? Why did they disappear? And what did we lose when they vanished? That is what we are about to uncover. Let's go back 3,000 years. You are standing in the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. The air smells like something you have never experienced, a combination of smoke, honey, and earth that modern noses can't even recognize. Every plant here serves a purpose. Nothing is ornamental. The Babylonians didn't grow flowers for beauty. They grew medicine. The same was true in ancient Egypt, in Greece, in Rome, in China, in the Americas before European contact. Herbal knowledge was the original science. It was passed down through priestesses, shamans, midwives, and physicians who spent lifetimes studying which leaf cured fever and which root induced sleep. This wasn't folklore. It was observation, trial and error over centuries. But then something happened. Actually, several things happened. First, the Library of Alexandria burned. Thousands of botanical texts turned to ash in a single week. Recipes that took generations to perfect? Gone. Second, empires collapsed. When Rome fell, trade routes died. Herbs from North Africa stopped reaching Europe. Persian medicines couldn't get to Greece. Regional knowledge became isolated, then forgotten. Third, religion changed everything. Medieval Christianity viewed certain herbs as pagan witchcraft. Healers, especially women, were executed. Their gardens were destroyed. Their knowledge died with them. Fourth, industrialization prioritized efficiency over diversity. Why grow 20 different medicinal plants when you could synthesize one chemical compound and sell it cheaper? And finally, colonization disrupted indigenous knowledge systems across the Americas, Africa, and Asia. When languages died, so did the names of plants. When communities were displaced, their sacred groves were paved over. But here is the truly haunting part. Some of these herbs were deliberately suppressed. There is evidence that certain Roman emperors banned specific plants because they gave too much power to the common people. Imagine a herb so effective at preventing pregnancy that the ruling class made it illegal. Imagine a plant that could cure wounds so quickly that it threatened the medical establishment. These weren't myths. These were documented in ancient texts. Physicians wrote about them. Poets praised them. Merchants sold them for fortunes. And now? We don't even know what most of them looked like. Archaeological evidence shows seeds that don't match any living plant. Ancient frescoes depict herbs we can't identify. Medical texts describe effects that no modern plant produces. So what exactly were these lost herbs? What did they do? And why does their disappearance matter? Let's start with number one, silphium. This was the most valuable plant in the ancient world. Romans paid its weight in silver. The plant appeared on Cyrenaic coins as a symbol of wealth and power. Julius Caesar reportedly stored 500 pounds of silphium in the Roman treasury alongside the gold. That is how precious it was. But here is the strange part. No one alive today has ever seen it. The last documented stock of silphium was given to Emperor Nero around 50 AD, and he ate it. After that, nothing. Complete extinction. Ancient texts describe it as a giant fennel with yellow flowers and a thick stalk. It grew wild along a narrow strip of North African coastline and couldn't be cultivated elsewhere. Farmers tried. They failed. The plant refused to grow anywhere except its native soil. So what did it do? According to ancient physicians, silphium was the perfect contraceptive. Women took it to prevent pregnancy with near-perfect effectiveness. It also treated coughs, sore throats, fever, and indigestion. Roman cooks used its resin, called laser, in nearly every dish. It was the ancient world's ultimate multitasker. Why did it disappear? Overharvesting is the obvious answer. Romans consumed it faster than it could reproduce. But some historians believe climate change played a role. Others think overgrazing by livestock destroyed the habitat. A few scholars argue it might still exist somewhere in the Libyan desert, just unrecognized. Whatever the reason, when silphium vanished, so did the most effective birth control method of the ancient world. Modern researchers have spent decades trying to identify its descendants. Some think Asafoetida might be related, but no one knows for sure. Herb number two is Cyrenaic balm. This was silphium's lesser-known cousin, and possibly even more valuable. While silphium got all the attention, Cyrenaic balm was the luxury item. Ancient sources describe it as an aromatic resin used in high-end perfumes, religious ceremonies, and elite medical treatments. Cleopatra allegedly used it in her beauty rituals. The plant produced a thick, honey-colored sap that hardened into translucent crystals. These crystals dissolved in warm oil and released a scent described as sweeter than frankincense, warmer than myrrh. Roman nobles burned it during banquets to demonstrate wealth. Medicinally, it treated respiratory problems and skin conditions. But its real value was symbolic. Owning Cyrenaic balm meant you had access to the rarest trade networks in the Mediterranean. It was the ancient equivalent of owning a Rolex. Why did it vanish? Same region as silphium, same timeline, probably the same causes. When the Cyrenaica trade collapsed in the 1st century AD, both plants disappeared. Some historians think they might have been the same plant at different growth stages. Others insist they were distinct species. Either way, we lost both. And with them, we lost an entire olfactory experience. Modern perfumers can't recreate the scent because they don't know the source. That smell, whatever it was, is gone forever. At number three is Elixir Vitae Herb. Medieval alchemists were obsessed with immortality. They believed somewhere in Europe grew a herb that could extend human life indefinitely. Not metaphorically. Actually stop aging. They called it various names. The Elixir Vitae Herb. The Philosopher's Plant. The Green Death Defeater. Multiple manuscripts describe expeditions to find it. Monks traveled to remote alpine valleys. Knights searched German forests. Herbalists climbed Pyrenees peaks. They were looking for a plant with silver leaves and roots that glowed faintly at night. Sounds like fantasy, right? Except multiple independent sources from different countries described the same plant. Same appearance, same supposed properties, same locations where it allegedly grew. One particularly detailed account from 1487 describes a Benedictine monk who found the herb growing near a monastery in Bavaria. He harvested it, dried it, and began documenting its effects. According to his journal, small doses increased energy and mental clarity. Larger doses caused vivid dreams and slowed pulse rate. Then the monastery burned. The monk died. His remaining samples were destroyed. And the location of the original plant? He never recorded it precisely enough for others to retrace his steps. Modern scholars dismiss this as superstition mixed with ergot poisoning or misidentified psychedelics. But here is the thing. These weren't ignorant peasants. These were educated monks and physicians who understood basic botany. They knew what nightshade looked like. They knew what mushrooms were. So what were they finding? We will never know. The plant, if it existed, is lost. And with it, whatever properties it actually had. Herb number 4 is Lovage Magnus. Not to be confused with modern lovage. This was different. Roman texts distinguish between lovage and lovage magnus, the great lovage. Standard lovage still exists. It tastes like celery. Nothing special. But lovage magnus? That was something else entirely. Ancient physicians prescribed it specifically for melancholy, what we would call depression. Patients drank lovage magnus tea 3 times daily and reportedly experienced lifted spirits and restored joy. It wasn't a sedative. It was described as energizing, but calming simultaneously. The plant supposedly grew wild in the Po Valley in northern Italy. Roman doctors considered it so effective, they tried cultivating it in Rome. Failed. The plant grew in Rome, but lost its medicinal properties. The chemistry only worked when it grew in native soil. By the 5th century AD, references to Lovage Magnus disappear. The last mention is in a medical text from 420 AD. After that, nothing. What makes this loss significant is the specificity. Romans weren't talking about general sadness. They described symptoms that match clinical depression, loss of appetite, inability to feel joy, constant fatigue. And they claimed Lovage Magnus treated it effectively. Modern antidepressants weren't developed until the 1950s. If Lovage Magnus worked even half as well as ancient sources claimed, we lost a major therapeutic tool for 1,500 years. Some botanists think it might have been a variety of Levisticum officinale, with unique compounds produced only in specific soil. Others believe it was a completely different species that went extinct. Either way, we can't get it back. At number 5 is Getae Herb of Immortality. The Getae were a Thracian tribe living in what is now Romania and Bulgaria. Greek historians, particularly Herodotus, wrote about a herb the Getae used in religious rituals. They called it the deathless plant because they believed it connected them to immortal gods. Warriors consumed it before battle. Priests used it in ceremonies. The dying took it to ensure safe passage to the afterlife. The herb was described as small, with purple-blue flowers, and a root that tasted bitter, then sweet. It grew only in high mountain meadows above a certain elevation. The Getae guarded its location fiercely. Outsiders who tried to harvest it were killed. Greek sources suggest the herb had genuine psychoactive properties. Users experienced visions, felt no fear, and could withstand pain more easily. Some modern researchers think it might have been a relative of aconite, or monkshood, powerful alkaloid plants still used in traditional medicine. But here is the problem. The Getae were conquered by Rome, then absorbed into other cultures. Their language died. Their religious practices were suppressed. And the location of their sacred herb? Lost with their oral traditions. 20th century botanists have searched Romanian mountains for unusual alkaloid-producing plants. They have found interesting specimens, but nothing matches the ancient descriptions exactly. Either the plant is extremely rare, or it is gone. What we lost wasn't just a plant. We lost an entire cultural relationship with altered consciousness. The Getae used this herb as a sacrament, not a drug. That distinction mattered to them, and we will never fully understand why. At number 6 is Panax coagulans. Traditional Chinese medicine has thousands of years of documented history, but some herbs appear in ancient texts and then vanish from later records. Panax coagulans is one of them. The name translates roughly as healing blood binder. It appears in medical manuscripts from the Han Dynasty, but disappears entirely after the 8th century. Ancient physicians used it specifically to stop internal bleeding, not cuts or wounds, internal hemorrhaging from disease or injury. Patients drank a decoction made from the dried root, and bleeding stopped within hours. The texts describe it as miraculous. The plant was described as growing in mountainous regions of Sichuan province. It had hand-shaped leaves, like other Panax species, but the root was distinctly red when fresh. Modern ginseng roots are pale. This was crimson. So what happened to it? One theory involves the An Lushan Rebellion in the 750s AD. This civil war devastated China and disrupted traditional trade routes. Many medicinal plant populations were destroyed. Regional knowledge was lost. Another theory suggests over-harvesting drove it to extinction. If the plant was as effective as claimed, demand would have been enormous. Ancient China had no conservation practices. Valuable plants were harvested until they disappeared. Modern traditional Chinese medicine doctors still know the name Panax coagulans. They know it existed. They wish they had it. But no one knows where to find it or what species it actually was. Genetic analysis of ancient herbarium samples might help. If any samples existed, they don't. Herb number 7 is Desert Mother's Root. Indigenous peoples of the American Southwest developed sophisticated botanical knowledge over thousands of years. Spanish conquistadors and missionaries documented some of this knowledge, but they destroyed far more than they recorded. One plant that appears in fragmented Spanish accounts is something translated as Desert Mother's Root. According to these accounts, native midwives used it during childbirth to speed labor and reduce pain. Women who took it reportedly had shorter deliveries with fewer complications. The Spanish noted this with interest because European midwifery had nothing comparable. The plant description is frustratingly vague. A low-growing herb with gray-green leaves and small white flowers. That could be dozens of desert species. The one distinguishing feature was the root, supposedly thick and tuberous with a distinctive spiral shape. Spanish colonizers saw the herb's value and wanted to control it. But the native women who knew where it grew refused to reveal locations. When those women died, from disease, violence, or forced relocation, the knowledge died with them. Modern ethnobotanists have interviewed descendants of those tribes. Some remember stories about a powerful birth herb, but the specific plant identification is lost. The spiral root detail doesn't match any known southwestern species. What makes this loss particularly tragic is the gendered nature of the knowledge. Women cultivated this herb. Women harvested it. Women knew its properties. When colonizers targeted indigenous women, intentionally or through disease, they destroyed entire libraries of botanical wisdom. We will never know if Desert Mother's Root could have improved modern obstetrics. We lost that chance. So what do all of these herbs have in common? They were valuable. They were vulnerable. And they vanished because we failed to protect knowledge itself. Notice the pattern. Most of these herbs didn't go extinct naturally. They disappeared because of human decisions. Conquest. War. Religious suppression. Economic priorities. Someone decided these plants weren't worth preserving. Someone decided the knowledge wasn't worth recording properly. We traded diversity for efficiency. We traded local wisdom for universal systems. We traded hundreds of potential medicines for a handful of mass-produced pharmaceuticals. And here is the truly sobering part. We are still doing it. Right now, somewhere in the world, an elderly herbalist knows the location of a medicinal plant that no scientist has ever studied. When that person dies without passing on the knowledge, we lose another thread connecting us to thousands of years of botanical wisdom. These seven lost herbs aren't just historical curiosities. They represent seven different relationships between humans and plants. Seven different ways of understanding healing. Seven different cultural values about health, death, and the natural world. When silphium went extinct, we didn't just lose a contraceptive. We lost a model of reproductive autonomy that wouldn't reappear in Western medicine for 2,000 years. When the Aztec death reverser vanished, we lost an approach to life-saving that valued emergency intervention above all else. When Britannicus matter disappeared, we lost potential treatments for chronic inflammatory conditions that still plague millions. Every time you take a modern pharmaceutical, remember this. That pill exists because thousands of plants were tested, studied, and understood. But we are working from an incomplete library. Entire shelves have been burned. Whole chapters are missing. And some of those missing pages might have held answers we desperately need. The herbs we lost aren't just plants. They are questions we can no longer ask. Problems we can no longer solve. Possibilities we can no longer imagine. Every time we eat, we are eating history. But some histories aren't just lost. They are extinct.